Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, and we are back with another edition of PWR Slam. And this is going to be a great edition here this evening. We've got Tracy Smothers going to be joining us in just a few moments. And we've got Fred Ottman that is going to be joining us a little bit later. And this is going to be... This is going to be a show, and we are joined by Brian Wayne. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing great, Sean. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm hanging in there, learning the soundboard tonight, or starting to anyway, and trying to grasp the hang of this to get it down pat. So we've got somebody that can consistently run this thing, so trying to learn the ins and outs of this, and... Hopefully you can hear me okay. I know some of the others said my microphone was a little bit staticky, and I'm not too sure how to fix that right now, but we'll be joined here in a couple minutes by Tracy Smothers, and a little bit later on we'll be joined by Fred Ottman, also known as Typhoon and the Shockmaster and Tugboat, and big doubleheader for us tonight. And we've got another edition next week that's going to blow you guys out of the water with Crazy Mary Dobson. And there is a rumor that a certain madman might be around, too. So don't be sure to join us next week and tune in. And Brian, well, we'll get right on to a power topic here. I'm sure by now you've seen the pictures of Bound for Glory this past weekend, and the only thing that I can really say about that is if that's Bound for Glory, they are bound for closure.
Yeah, I think actually while I was looking over at Tracy's Facebook, somebody posted Bound for Bankruptcy.
It's, you know, when independent shows are drawing more than what you're drawing, and you're supposed to be on the national platform, that tells me that you're not doing something right on the promotion aspect of things. Because there's no reason in San Diego, California, that that building shouldn't have been sold out.
No, I mean, it comes down to, if you have to, at least for appearance sake, paper the town, and for those that don't know what paper means, that's free tickets. You do that. I mean, you give it to the schools, you give it to the community centers, you do something. You go out and hand it to the homeless people on the streets. You at least give the appearance of a packed house, whether it's packed or, you know, paid for or not.
Well, and that's just it. You see that big empty arena, and it makes you question, is this really what TNA is headed for? And if that's where TNA is headed, are fans going to be a little bit more, you know, adamant to have another competition back in? Or are they going to want to, you know, support another company coming in and trying to be second best? Because if TNA closes, who's left to compete against Vince? There's nobody left. Ring of Honor's not ready to step up to that level yet to take Vince on. And I don't know that they'll ever be at that level. Don't get me wrong, I'm a big Ring of Honor fan, but Ring of Honor and WWE, those are two completely different platforms.
Well, it's not even that. The mistake TNA is making is trying to run these big arenas. What made ECW such a visually good product was they wasn't running. Eventually, they did make the mistake to try to run.
Hold on. Brian, go ahead and talk.
Hello.
Was to try to run some of these big arenas. But you know, when they were at their best was when they were running the mid-level, the lower arena seating capacity arenas, and on TV the product looked amazing. And if TNA would have stuck with that, I think their product would look better.
And that was Tracy Smothers calling me to line everything up. He'll be joining us in the studio in just a few moments. And he's here now. And caller 331, you are live on TWR Slam.
Oh, hey, it's just me. I must have bumped in. So I'm actually on the road, so get back to me. I'll bump back in just a little bit, okay?
All right. Caller 615, you are on the air with TWR Slam. Is this Tracy Smothers?
Yeah, this is Tracy.
All right, Tracy, thank you for joining us.
Listen, I'm at work. In about 5 minutes, I've got to jump off here just for a minute, and I'm call right back. I am taking a delivery to a coal mine. It's a long drive here, about 20-25 minutes from the store, and I have to let them know because I have to meet them up at the railroad tracks, okay? Just bear with me.
Okay.
Matter of fact, if it's okay with y'all, let me go ahead and do that, make that call, and then I'll call right back, okay?
Okay. That's fine, Tracy.
I'll call right back. All right.
Thank you, Tracy. All right. Well, we are on with Brian Wayne and Sadistic Sean David, and we will be joined in just a little while by Tracy Smothers. You just heard him in. He'll be calling back in for this interview, and it's going to be an exclusive one. And, Brian, let's get back to where we left things off. You know, ECW, you're right, was able to emerge into what it was because they ran the smaller buildings, and they ran the smaller buildings, and they packed the smaller buildings, which led to them getting bigger buildings and packing those buildings also. TNA needs to focus more on drawing an audience rather than paying this big-name talent.
And you know, there is nothing wrong with taking a step back at some point. If you're losing money, then you need to look at where you can cut costs. Cutting talent necessarily isn't always the answer. If you want to cut the big name talent, the big buck talent, yes. Unless they've got guaranteed contracts, then you can't. I understand that. But if you're paying for a building, say you're going to San Diego and paying for this big building, or you're going to Knoxville, Tennessee, and you're running Thompson Bowling, and you're only getting 500 people, when you could have been going to the Civic Auditorium where 500 people looks okay, not great, but okay, then you should have been running the Civic Auditorium.
Tracy, are you back with us?
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right. Brian, I'm going to let you go ahead and start the interview off with Tracy. I know you two have known each other for a while. And Tracy, my friend Jason Maples from Fort Wayne, Indiana, says hello.
Oh, tell him all, yeah.
And Brian, go ahead and start the interview.
Well, Tracy, just so you know who you're talking to, this is Brian Wayne. And as you would always say, Big Bubba, no trouble.
Yeah. All right, Bubba. This is Coke.
So how you doing, Tracy?
All good, good. Just trying to make a living,
now
it is.
Well,
but, yeah.
They brought me on tonight to interview you for their show, and so what I want to do is just get right into the basic questions. You know, there's a lot of questions people want to hear you answer and talk about things in your career, but let's start at the beginning. How did Tracy Smothers get into professional wrestling?
I grew up watching it like a lot of us did, and I always liked it, you know, and soap opera and just talking trash, you know, and always saw that they were, you know, athletes, a lot of ex-athletes from all sports, you know, come into business, because that really meant something, that, you know. And then and when I was in college, we didn't have wrestling magazines where I originally come from, and I'm sure there was no cable TV. And any of that, and you know, we just never saw it. And when I got in college, I got to watch the remember the old Georgia Championship Wrestling, you know, and that, and got to watching that. And then I was working out at the gym where I used to work out at, and a lot of Jerry Garrett's, Jerry Lawler's guys were all working out of there. I met Steve Kern, Stan Lane, they were the fabulous ones then, and got talking to them. I wasn't real happy with school. And, you know, they trained me, and after that, Pojo trained me, you know, and then Bob Armstrong. But, yeah, that's pretty well how I got into it. I'd see them in there all the time. I started in 83.
And
I did it. Go ahead.
Well, some of our callers, our listeners may not know, but you did play some collegiate football, correct?
Yeah, I went for football and wrestling to Carson Newman. I just played football. Played 2 years, and that's when, you know, I'd see those guys in the gym, and just wasn't really happy with school, and really I wish I would, you know, finished. I was going to be a coach, and you know, things like that. Just got the bug and wanted to do it. And my first 3 years in the business, I kept my old job loading trucks, and you know, working 2 to 4 times a week, just kind of on call and book some, you know, just whatever I could get. Are you guys with me?
Yeah, I just had to take a drink there, sorry. After you got your training over with, where was the first areas you got to establish yourself?
Of course, Tennessee for Lawler and, you know, and Jerry Lawler and Jerry Jarrett, you know, and Eddie Marlin. That was I worked three years there part time, kept my job, loading trucks. And then I got my first full time job. Bill Dundee got me in the old Bill Watts' Mid South in Louisiana, out of Alexandria, Louisiana. I was there for about a year. Bill got me my first full time job in the business. He'd just come out of there and booking it and come back to Tennessee and worked for Bill Watts, for Grizzly Smith, and I was there a year and learned a lot there. Jake Roberts was finishing up, going to New York. Ted DiBiase was there, Derek Duggan, Buzz Sawyer, Dr. Death, Steve Williams, Dick Slater. Learned a lot there, from guys like that. Eddie Gilbert was there. It's called Ultimate Warrior and Sting were there. They were called Blade Runners or something. Had old Tommy Gilbert every day, Terry Taylor, guys like that. Just learned a lot, from them. My first full-time job. And then come back and work in Tennessee for about a year. And then I worked in Florida for about a year. And then come back to Tennessee for a while and was going to overseas some. Went to Continental for about a year. Then started going to Japan in 88. I went four times. Steve and I hooked up in Florida for the old Florida office, Florida Championship Wrestling. And then we went to Continental for about a year. And in 1990, we went to Japan a few times there. And then in 1990, went to WCW for 2.5 years. And then I was in Smoky Mountain for 3 years, three and a half. And, things like that. And then we go to Japan 4 or 5 times a year when I worked for Jimmy Cornette. And, I worked for WWF for a year and did independence around that. And then worked for ECW about 2.5 years. And I was a trainer for about a year, I guess, in Memphis in the developmental. And then I got out in 2002, bounty hunted repo cars off and on until about 2005, And I got back full time in the business 2005, 2009, and I've been doing this job I'm doing now for four and a half years, well over 4 years, things like that. But I just work now around my job, and I got out about a year and a half, I guess, and I just started back some in May, but not full time. I'm an old man now, 51, so, I'm just glad to be back working. Just have fun.
And you and Steve, most widely were known as the Wild Eyed Southern Boys. And in the South, that was just a hugely great over gimmick. But when you went to WCW, they kind of changed the name a little. Can you give us a reasoning behind that?
Well, the Rebel flag was controversial back then, and of course, third base, they were leaving, going all over. And that was Dusty's idea, Dusty Rhodes, but the TV, the corporate people come to him and said that we need to do something different with that. We don't need that on TV with the Rebel flag. And we didn't portray it, nothing as racial, but, it was just a gimmick that Kevin Sullivan was the one who put the gimmick on us in Florida in 87. And that was the reason for that.
And they changed it to the Young Pistols. Did that kind of have a...
Yeah.
Still kind of a tribute to Bob Armstrong in a way, though, because he was always the Bullet, correct?
Yeah. We're just glad to have a job. It was fun.
And you've always had you've always had a pretty close relationship with the Armstrongs throughout the years.
Yeah. That's sad about Brad, and you know those guys, great people, great people.
Were you on the show this past summer? They had a show tribute.
The middle of June, I sure was. Steve come down, and he had not worked in a while, about 7 years, he said. And we worked, a six-man, Steve and I and Doug Gilbert, with Bordell Walker and Paulie and Timmy. He's stormtrooper. But we all good six man. That's fine. Good to see. You know, good to see a lot of guys. You know, and for good cause. Brad's daughter.
And you know, just to get back in it with a lot of the guys that were working with Continental and Smoky Mountain and the like during Brad's, you know, greatest runs, I guess, kind of a good thing to do also.
Yeah, it's good. That's the one thing about getting back working some. See guys you hadn't seen in a long time, and you never know, you may never see them again. So many have passed away. It's just sad.
Well, we saw some footage posted of you wrestling the bear and had some people ask you about that. What was that like?
I actually wrestled three different bears. I wrestled one when I was wanting to get in the business in 83 in a bar, it was Ginger, and went three-minute rounds with her, and she had the muzzle on her, and the guy was a cattle prodder. And she was the toughest, meanest, 750-pound black bear, and survived that. And then the second time was in '86, I'm delivering at this coal mine here. I hope this train had me blocked. I got to wait on these guys. But second time was in '86 when I worked in Louisiana for Bill Watts, and it was a grizzly bear. It was 7 foot, 2,000 pounds, and survived that. Three-minute rounds with it. And the one that's on YouTube was a Siberian grizzly bear. It was only 10 months old. It was 550 pounds. And I did that three nights in a row in Birmingham, Montgomery and Florence, Alabama. And the reason they had me do it was Wendell Cooley. Do you remember him, Wildcat Wendell Cooley? Remember him?
I sure do.
Yeah. Well, Wendell hurt his knee and he was doing a thing with Dutch where, trying to get the title back and chasing Dutch for the belt and all that. And would sign anything, you know, to get a title shot. Tricked him into signing it, saying he had to wrestle the bear. He got hurt in Prattville, Alabama. They knew Robert Fuller. Remember him, knew I'd done it a couple of times, so I actually did it three nights in a row. I worked a tag match, Steve and I, against Robert Fuller, Jimmy Golden. Then I worked the bear in the middle, three-minute rounds with it, and then I worked with Dutch, you know, and Robert took care of me money-wise, and three nights in a row did that. And I was in bed for like 3 days. I couldn't get out of the shower, jacuzzi. You know what I mean? You know, I was just the boy. It was in 1989, a long time ago.
Now, they've since outlawed doing the wrestling the bear thing, haven't they?
I think, yeah, the Humane Society. Funny story, that one, the one you saw that's on the YouTube was just the third round. You know, it was the third round, only the third round, and it was the first of three nights. But before I was going out to go do that, I'd done the tag match and knew I had a Dutch. I'm thinking, God, how can I get through this? I'm stretching, getting ready. My music's playing. And I turn around and they got the camera. And a news lady and a Humane Society lady was there. And they were on me hard about, you know, saying that I was being a... I'm not at this coal mine, man. It goes crazy. You hear that?
Yep.
Yeah, not out here. But I'm waiting on these guys to pick up this food. But I looked and I says, I don't know why y'all worry about the bear. What you worry about me? I got this three nights in a row. And that was the news, right? And that what clip you saw was from the local news in Birmingham. And of course, they didn't play that on TV. But it was on the 10 o'clock news later. Hey, I'm gonna have to put y'all on hold in a minute when these guys pull up. If I lose you, I'll call you right back because I think this may be them.
Okay.
No, it's not them.
Tracy, can you tell us a little bit about how the Young Pistols came about?
Yeah, well, that's what I was telling Brian earlier. Corporate people, WCW, you know, they, you know, the thing was, of course, on TBS and, you know, live pay-per-views, live clashes, and TV. Saturday night was the big TV then, you know, and they just couldn't have the rebel flag on the cable TV there. And of course, you're in Atlanta area, and you know the rate, and you know it just was real controversial back then. Now not so much, you know, but back then it was.
Right.
They couldn't have it, you know, so they had to switch, you know, change their gimmick.
All right. Could you tell us about the Wild Eyed Southern Boys?
Yeah, Kevin Sullivan. I was in Tennessee and you know, kind of needed, had been there a while and needed to go. And Steve had come from Continental, and Kevin had worked up in Continental, you know, for the Fullers. And Kevin was looking, and Kevin put the gimmick on us. Guys, I think this is my guys here. If you'll let me do this for a couple minutes, I'll be right back with you, okay?
Okay.
I'll call you right back. All right.
Brian, this has been a good interview so far. We're going to go to a song break, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. Alright, and we are back. I think we lost Tracy, but we're back. Up, and here is Tracy.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, guys. Alright, and I think we got Tracy back.
Yeah.
Tracy, you back with us?
Yeah.
Alright. Alright, guys, we're back. And we were talking about the Wild Eyed Southern Boys.
Yeah.
Kevin Sullivan kind of helped put that together then.
Yeah, he came up with the gimmick. Kevin did it. Kevin Sullivan did it. He sure did. He called me with Hiro Matsuda. You guys remember him? And had Hiro on the line with him. And back then, you know, there wasn't any videotapes or any of that, you know, DVD or, you know, any of that. It was just pictures. And actually,
Steve,
Luke
with
Williams. Hello?
Steve Kane, you with us?
Oh, no. Sorry, you can actually use there, Tracy. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm here. I am here.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
You're on with Tracy, Steve.
Hey, Tracy, how you doing? It has been ages. I don't know if you remember from back in the days in Indianapolis with Jeff Cohn and Bert Prentice.
Oh, yeah, I do. It's just been a long time. How are you doing? I remember you.
I'm doing well. I am doing well, man. It's good to talk to you again. Like I say, it's been ages. I just walked in the door myself, so I'm kind of running a little bit here. I'm going to kind of throw in, because as you were starting to talk about with the Southern Boys Guns, you were in WCW at probably the height of the tag team run over there. Kind of give everybody a little bit of an overview as to what tag team scene was like at your time over there.
Oh, you know, got to work with, you know, the Midnight Express, with the Freebirds, with the Steiners, with Dick Slater, and Dick Murdoch, when they Hardliners, they were called, and worked a lot with Dutch Mantel and Black Bart, you know, when they were doing that cowboy thing, and there were others. Well, like, remember the York Foundation, they have different, like Tommy Rich, you know, Ricky Morton as a team, or Terry Taylor, or one of those guys, all three of them, you know, things like that. A lot of you know, great workers, you know, and it was a lot of fun. Guys that could, you know, they could call it all in the ring. You just kept your mouth shut, try not to mess up. You know.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah, it was a good experience, you know, to learn from guys like that. Bobby Eaton back then was just out of this world, you know.
All right. Okay, I'm gonna advance a few years farther up the line, because one of my favorite things outside of, course, our time working together over in Indianapolis was one of your runs in ECW when you were doing something called the Thugs. Teams were terrible.
Smoky Mountain.
Smoky
Mountain.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
and we did
okay.
We did the USWA thing against Smoky Mountain against USWA. We were called the Smoky Mountain Bugs, but yeah, that was fun. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, your intro on the mic every time. I always laughed every time I'd hear you do that whole bit. and maybe if you don't mind, do it for some of our younger viewers who are listeners, rather, who weren't around back in those days. Maybe if you would kind of give them that little spiel here for a second, if you don't mind.
Oh, the Thugs?
Yeah.
Talk about what it stood for? Well, it was a group of guys that I grew up with, and a clique of guys, you know, that was, I mean, I wouldn't call it a gang or nothing, you know, but they were a bunch of nuts. They had some unique names. There was Peppy Stud, Cockbite, Jambo, Wild Dog, Snoopy, Superman, Bucky. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Bow Wow. Yeah, some Chirp, Beano. I mean, it was some nuts. I mean, these guys are crazy. But Doug Stepper, they had a softball team, too. We played backyard football, you know, and go over to Nashville and stuff and play. But Doug Stepper, you know, it was like a war cry. Like, T is for terrible, H is for hell. U is for ugly and G is for jail, because a thug can't spell. You know, that's what all day long. Nothing from wrestling, you know. I had to get a little bit established in the business before they didn't let me use that. yeah. Our softball shirt, have your number on the back, on the front, and say nobody does it like a thug. You know.
Yeah.
Or a troop of guys. Jesse Gray, God bless him, is in there too. They were all older than me, and they never let me get in trouble. They didn't ever, I mean, they weren't crooks or nothing, you know. Actually, they did break in the dollar store when they graduated high school. So it was Bucky, Shotbite, and Bow Wow broke at the dollar store. That kind of they kind of disbanded after that. You know, they still get together, but you know, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, there you go.
Tracy, I know you didn't really enjoy the Freddie Joe Floyd thing. Can you tell us a little bit about why you didn't like that?
Oh, well, it wasn't, I didn't, well, I mean, I could have done without the green boots and green tights and green wristbands and the banjo music, but the name Freddie Joe Floyd, that was an honor to be given that name because it was Jack and Jerry Briscoe's. I don't know what was first or middle or that they were originally from the area of Boeggs, Oklahoma. And that was their, like, real name, I think, or something like that. Freddie Joe, I don't know which way or on that. But, I was always the Briscoes, of course, and, you know, especially Jack Briscoe was, like, an idol to me, you know. And so that's where that came from, created that. Are you there?
Yeah. And then I guess another thing, I mean, as you pointed out, some of the younger fans might not know your early days, but they'll remember you mostly from the FBI and ECW. So, you know, you want to tell us about how you became an Italian, you know, from Tennessee.
You were kind of breaking up, or some kind of noise going on.
I was just talking about how, like, you know, a lot of the younger fans won't remember maybe the older days, but they'll remember you mostly from ECW. And being in the FBI,
so I was going to say, how did
you become an Italian being from Tennessee, from Springfield, Tennessee?
Well, you know, I was still working for WWF, it was called then, and Chris Candido got me booked. They were kind of working together, starting to a little bit then, and Chris Candido got me booked. I was on a loop for them, on House Show's loop, and Chris Candido, God bless him, got me booked in the arena that night. We had a show at New Haven, Connecticut that day, I want to say two and a half hours from Philly. So I rode up with Chris's then wife, you know, Tammy, Sonny, and so rode to the place, to the town with her. And I was supposed to work Terry Funk and put Terry Funk over before the
Hello? Up, and we've lost Tracy.
Well, I know about where he's at right now, and that's kind of a in-and-out cell reception where he's talking about.
Okay. Well, we were
He'll
on right with Tracy Smothers, and we are going to be joined here in just a few minutes by Fred Ottman. And it was great to have Tracy on. Tracy, thank you for calling in. And it was kind of cool to talk to him. Next week, we've got Crazy Mary Dobson on. And we're going to be bringing you some more guests in the following weeks. No, we've got some great guests lined up for November already. We'll go into that at a later time, but next week, Crazy Mary Dobson, and there's a rumor that a certain madman might be around, so be sure to join us for that on PWR Slam. And we had Mickey Knuckles in, and last week, and that was a great interview. And PWR Slam. We're still kind of new, but we're bringing a lot to the table. And I didn't see a lot of Raw. Brian, did you see any of Raw this week?
No, I don't watch Raw anymore. It's not, because it's just I'm more into regular television, and when the new seasons of shows starts, Raw gets bumped off my scheduling.
I haven't had the chance to catch up on any of it. But, you know, TNA Bound for Glory, man. I just don't know. That's
now,
the
accounts I got, though, the actual pay-per-view itself was good. And this is coming from people that usually don't like TNA's product. But the biggest complaint I've heard was what you mentioned earlier, the house itself.
Hello, caller 615. You're up back on the air.
Hey, it's me. Sorry, I lost you.
It's Tracy Smothers again. All right, he's back with us. and
sorry, I'm in a bad area. I'm coming back from the coal mines.
Right.
Bad area there.
Yeah, I was telling them, I know about where you're probably at right now, and phone reception isn't the greatest in those areas.
Yeah, not at all.
But you were giving us kind of a lowdown on how the FBI got formed with you as a member.
Yeah. What did y'all hear? What was the last thing you heard me say? I was talking, and then I didn't.
You were riding in the car with Tammy up to Connecticut.
Oh, all right. That's the last thing you heard? Good Lord, I talked about that. All right, well, I worked with Taz that night, and I was still working for Vince. I went over and did, and Taz liked the match, and Paul said he would book me some. And then I did a tour to Kuwait with WWF, and then had a two-week house show run there, and then I started with Paul after that, and was there 2.5 years. And the next night I worked for Paul at 10 to 8. Y'all, Paul would do things at the last minute, so didn't know who I was working with, so I asked Sabu, and he went up and asked Paul, and Dreamer come over and says, hey, we're going to put you with a tag here, you and Chris Chetty worked against Guido and Tommy Rich, and said, you turn and put you with Guido and Tommy with the FBI thing. I was like, cool. So that's what we did. We did it 2.5 years. You know, it was a lot of fun.
And then it even brought in, you know, somebody me and you know well, Dave Cash, to become Kid Cash into the group at one point.
Yeah. He was starting to come in to the tail end when I was there, Cash was.
I remember one night where Ricky came up, and him and Tommy Rich just got on their knees in the middle of the ring and slugfest and to a bloodbath, and that was just they ate that up in the arena.
Oh yeah, Ricky and Tommy did.
Yeah.
Okay, that's before I got there. I knew they'd worked each other. No, I didn't know exactly what.
Yeah, I mean, Ricky came up, and he had done a couple of shots. Actually, he was supposed to come up a few months before that. The New Jack had tried to get him to come up. I was there, and had got me to try to get Ricky to come up to work with me and Ricky to work with him. Ricky, of course, wouldn't come because he had a booking in Morristown for one of the local promoters here. He wouldn't come. Well, they got him up a couple months later, and they started out the match with him and Rich, and they just ended up on their knees doing a slugfest. The crowd's eating it up. All of a sudden, New Jack and Mustafa's music hit, and Ricky and Tommy end up fighting as a team against them after they've already bloodied each other up.
That was in ECW?
Yep, at the arena.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know they did that. All right.
It was a beautiful night, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, you for somebody that grew up like me that was going to the Smoky Mountain shows, to see them guys getting some do up there and getting respect up there. And that's what was so great about the
Brian, I don't mean to cut you off. I think caller 863, is this Fred Ottman?
Yes, it is.
All right, Tracy, it was good to have you on. We're going to have to schedule for some more time with you, if you don't mind.
Okay.
We are on.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm almost back to work. I don't know if Fred can hear me, but just to tell you, still doing my best. Love the guy. I've known him a long time. Big, strong guy. Good Lord. But,
man, Tracy, you can
give
hear
my
me,
best.
Man.
Tell him hello.
God bless you, man.
Okay, you guys have a good night. Feel free to
thank you, Tracy.
Okay. All right.
Steve, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm back. I lost
all
my
right.
phone, too, so.
We are on with Fred Ottman, and I'm going to let you go ahead and carry it away.
Excellent. Hey, Fred, how are you doing? It's been, again, this is like an old home reunion night here. Tracy and I worked together about 25 years ago in Indianapolis, and Fred and I worked together almost close to that same amount of time in Windy City. So how are you doing, Fred?
Excellent, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I am doing well. Hey, I'm going to go back and play the old salty dog bit here and kind of bring back, because a lot of people who may not know your history don't know that in the early part of your career, as Tracy was talking about this too, you spent a good amount of time down in probably what was considered one of the best territories of its day, and that's the old Memphis territory and Jerry Lawler. So why don't you kind of start out and talk to us about that, if you would, please.
Well, it's excellent, man. I mean, I was here probably a better part of 2 years or more altogether. I came here from my first territory, which was in Texas, and they sent me here, and I was still real green, and I got a taste of this Southern style wrestling, and it was just incredible, man. A lot of funny ha-ha, a lot of feuds, a lot of serious stuff, a lot of talent coming in and out. I mean, it was just tremendous, man. It was a great development, I mean, a great learning experience, and, I mean, just a lot of great guys, and the opportunity to work with a lot of veterans here that have been around for years, you know, Jerry Lawler, you know, and that was the very beginning for Jeff Jarrett. He's probably fresh out of high school when he started in this territory, working for his dad and Jerry Lawler when they were taking care of the Memphis area. I mean, we traveled to Kentucky, Indiana, Arkansas, Missouri, Mississippi, and Tennessee, all over the South. It was just tremendous.
Oh, wow. All right. Now, tell us, you know, any like landmark programs that that you worked over there during that time, if you would.
Programs? Well, first of all, toward the end of my stay here, I worked with The Rock. When The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, was 12 years old, his dad, Rocky Johnson, I had the opportunity to work a program with him. I worked with Jerry Lawler. I actually lost a hair mask. We had a deal where they had the Wheel of Torture, where you spun the wheel, and I wound up at one point eating dog food, and I hit with kendo sticks, and just a variety of different tortures, so to speak. I had Austin Idol was in here working for me. I worked with him. Bam Bam Bigelow, In and Out, with another guy named J.T. Southern back in the day. That they come fresh out of the Monster Factory with Mike Sharp. Kojo Yamamoto and two Japanese guys, along with Paul Diamond, who was in here at the time. Pat Tanaka. I worked with, trying to think now. Here in this territory was Dirty Road. You had Rock and Roll Express, In and Out. The Fabulous Ones. They came in and worked a little bit in here. I'm trying to remember still. I mean, there's just a lot of talent that swapped in and out. Off the top of my head, I can't remember everybody.
It's been years now as the two of us have been in this business, and names in that have people we've worked with probably just, you know, after a while, it's like going, okay, wait a second. Now, who was in this? Okay, was I with this guy? Okay, no, I wasn't with him here. I was with him over there and so on and so forth and that, which kind of, you know, I kind of like to, you know, talk old days, old school and that, you know, kind of explain to, you know, because a lot of our, you know, listeners are obviously, of course, they're used to, like, you know, Ring of Honor, WWE, TNA. Kind of explain the territory system and that if you can, so, you know, these kids can understand what you and I know and, you know, can talk about.
Well, it was the meat and potatoes of the business. I mean, it was like, you know, a lot of people refuse to remember that wrestling started in the carnival circuit, you know? It was truly, you know what I'm saying? It was running the gamut. I mean, you know, carnivals traveled from areas of the United States all around. That's why, especially in the South, the language that the wrestlers spoke in the time was carny. You know, when they spoke to each other and that, they spoke in Carney language. And,
Is
Arnie B is there he as well. They even called their spots in Carney. You know the deal.
Oh, yeah. I still do it.
And to be honest, when you go to the carnival and the boys know you wrestle, that was a you were always treated like gold when you went to the local carnival. You were recognized, no matter, you know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah. I mean, that's family there. And you went from one area to the next area. The world champion would travel from territory to territory, depending if it was AWA, if it was NWA, you know what I'm saying? They would, the champion at that time would travel all over the world and take the belt with them and go from area to area to do the title shot and to work the angles.
Yep. So
he was a true world champion.
All right. Now tell everybody kind of where are you worked at before WWF found out who you were and picked you up.
Well, when the great Malenko is the guy that broke me into the business. And I went straight from him. I had a tryout in Atlanta when it was just a single station up there with Ted Turner. When he had that, it was an NWA, their NWA affiliate. Then, they came up there and took me in. I mean, I didn't even know what kayfabe meant. And they sent me up there with So Grand. And took me, shot me across. I got called up by Buck Rowley, who was the booker for San Antonio, which Tully Blanchard's dad had just sold to another gentleman by the name of Fred Barron, that became Texas All-Star Wrestling. And Fred Barron was the actual promoter for the Southern Hemisphere of Texas for World Class. He did all their shows, promoted all their shows for the Southern region of Texas. Okay.
Okay.
And he bought that office from Tully Blanchard's dad, and that was my first territory there. I went through four bookers while working there and learning there. Buck Rowley is the one that initially brought me in. Chavo Guerrero, Jonathan Boyd of the Sheep Herders, and the last one, there was one other one I forget now. But it was awesome. I worked with guys from Mexico, you know, and they worked from the opposite side as the American wrestlers. So I learned more about that. A lot of 2 out of 3 fall matches. And in an area where people work with each other from daily and then on Friday and Saturday night, cut each other's throats and shoot each other, it was a bloodbath every night in the wrestling ring, you know, because it was the only believable thing in town. And Shawn Michaels was there along with the person that trained him. Okay. Many Mexican wrestlers, all the Guerreros I worked with, Chavo, Mondo, Hector Guerrero, Boy Guerrero came in and even did some spot stuff. I mean, the word angle. It was incredible. I mean, I had my first cage match with Ox Baker. It was incredible. I mean, that was after he did Escape from New York. You know, because the joke was he didn't even take a bump in the, they hit him in the head with a Super Bowl with a nail and killed him, and he didn't take a bump.
Wow.
You know, Ox is an awesome guy, man. He's an awesome guy.
He's a master of psychology and how to work a crowd to just get them to hate him without him even having to actually do a move at all.
And the look, I mean the look.
Yep.
I mean, classic. You know, I mean, you haven't had that look since back in the old time movies, the Swedish Angel. That played in a lot of the old time horror and mystery flicks. When I was a kid, you know, but just a tremendous Bruiser Brody, who's, you know, I've learned a whole lot from as far as, you know, working as a big man, who taught me, you know, gave me a lot of incentive in what would be expected out of you and how you should work and, you know, and the whole nine yards. And he's a machine. He can go. And I see him work a ton of matches with Mark Lewin. You know, in Texas. I mean, one man gang, he would come in and out and work down there. I had the opportunity, he was one of my first big men. And the guy, I watched him working in Florida when I was, you know, younger, okay? And he was working in that area with Sir Oliver Humperdinck as his manager, the Red Rooster. You know, so I mean, and wound up being a good friend of mine. I seen him not too long ago. I mean, him and his wife, just great people, you know, and one of the best big man workers in the business, you know, in case people, you know, didn't know that. He went from being a terror to a king of dreams, you know, the dancing machine, you know, so it's crazy. I mean, Texas was a tremendous area. I went from there to Tennessee, I was there for over 2 years. Went and worked in a short time in Pensacola with a new group that was trying to start up. Then I took off for about 8 months. I was living in eastern Tennessee, eastern Kentucky, outside Hazard, because I had some issues in my life and that I went through. And then I came back on the road, went back, and wound up going to Portland, Oregon for Billy Jack Haynes. I went up there with J.D. Southern, who was living in Nashville, Tennessee. We went together to go up there. We were up there for about 8 months. He was trying to do that, to run opposition up there with Don Owens in that territory. And I get a few shots in and out for Carter Blackwell, who was running in Georgia for a while. And then when I did finally come back, I went back to Florida. I went to work down there for the Tampa office, and then it wound up being taken over by Dusty Rhodes, Steve Kern, Mike Graham, and another gentleman, professional wrestling, PWF, but anyway, they started that company down there, and we wrestled there for a year and a half or more, and that's pretty basically where I had my first trip overseas after we had a big show in Tampa, and Otto Von came over from Austria as scouting for talent for his first show over there, and I got my first opportunity to go over and work there. I was there for like 2 weeks, and I got a chance to work with Otto. And when I came back, I had WCW and WWF call me at the same time. And were interested in me. That's when they called me in the office there in Tampa, and you know, and gave me some incentive, you know, and some insight, because it was like, you know, being with those guys, it was like the closest thing to family outside my own family. I mean, as far as just being Mike Graham, God rest his soul, was a tremendous person, you know, and Dusty, who's my brother-in-law from my first marriage, him and. Legendary announcer Gordon Soley, who is just a phenomenal guy, just a great singer. And Steve Burns, you know, I mean, they were just all, you know, got there and you talked with me, man. It was like talking with, you know, like your brothers, or, you know, or a dad. And, you know, and, you know, it's all up to you where you want to go or what you want to do. And we just wanted to give you the option. These people have been in contact with us. And that was, you know, that was that. And I made that decision with no disrespect to WCW, but, you know, I always wanted to go since I first broke in WWF. And, I mean, that's where, the, you know, where it was to be. And I figure hopefully, you know, I'm ready enough to take the responsibility and to go up there and do a good job. I mean, you know, and conduct myself that way. And that was it, you know. And then after that, I worked a little bit in WCW, did my deal there. And then I worked back up in WWF. And I wound up going off the road prematurely because I started businesses back in Florida. And my partner was my brother-in-law, and he wound up getting shot and killed, and I had to come off the road, and I had way too much invested in a lot of stuff going on, and, you know, just a little turmoil there, and I thought, I mean, wasn't going to cry. I've never been one to cry over spilled milk. You know, you just got to take every day like, you know, do every day like it's a Friday and every night like it's a Saturday night, they say. You know, and just, you know, roll punches. You know, you can't cry about that.
Okay. Okay. All right. So,
what I feel like it's just seeing me here doing this. So, well, okay. Now, how did Vince get you hooked up with John Tenta and start the whole team that, of course, became known as the Natural Disasters?
Well, that, you know, they finished doing, you know, John was finished with his deal with his run with Hogan,
mm-hmm.
with Hogan still at that time right there. And they had a post came to me about it after if I was in. I was, you know, I was really loving just being, you know, the big baby face with being, you know, Tugboat and, you know, and everything. I didn't feel that it had gone really, you know, as long as in the full gamut that it was. But whenever they came to me, and I, you know, and John, awesome guy. I mean, I liked working with him and as far as on and off. I mean, he was, you know, I miss him to this day. I think about him often, okay? And it was one of those deals. I asked him, you know, and I'm thinking, like, man, what, you know, we worked so much similar, you know, as far as our ability goes and agility and that stuff. I mean, and I could learn so much from John. You know, he was such a well-rounded, I mean, he's a great amateur, great pro. He wrestled, he was undefeated at sumo in Japan. You know, he's an alternate on the Olympic team for Canada. He wrestled at LSU as an amateur. You know, and he had a good heart. I mean, if I could pick a brother, you know, if I had a brother, he would have been it. You know what I mean? You know, we could talk, we could communicate good. You know, we looked after each other. You know, and I mean, even, you know, outside the, like I said, even at home when he moved to Florida in Orlando, and me and my family would do stuff with him and his family, you know, go to, you know, different, to a couple of the theme parks and that kind of stuff. We were home if we, you know, had the opportunity and we did that kind of stuff, you know, enjoy each other, being around each other. You know, we didn't get up under each other's skin. You know, because it's hard when you know, you're on the road. 300, I mean, we wrestle 300 and, you know, 30, 40 days a year. You know, I talked to Phil Eady one time, not too long ago, you know, and he was on, when they were really hot and heavy, and we were busy, but he wrestled one full year, got a day off, then wrestled another full year before he had another day off. Okay? So think about it. You know, our life consisted of planes, trains, and automobiles. And sometimes both, depending on where you're at, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you know, it was a hectic life. And when you're on the road, the tensions and all that stuff, you're on the road more than you're with your home, with your family, you know, in a lot of instances. Even on the the shallowest of years, okay? I mean, it's a hard life, but you know what I'm saying? It's a life that we've chosen, and it's, you know, one of those deals. I mean, if you didn't want to be there, you should have, you know, maybe rethought your career choices.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. I mean, I know you're speaking to the choir here, brother. Because I mean, I missed a few family things
making in the business, you're making enough money. You're hoping that you make enough money they'll pay for the gas to get you where you need to be, or you have beer money, or you have enough for a sandwich. You know what I'm saying? But guys that are so wanting to wrestle and so hot and so wanting to be in the business, sacrifice. That's the sacrifice that they made. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, the stock car drivers that are driving racetrack for NASCAR, they didn't start, you know, making fortunes where they're at. You know what I'm saying? They spent a whole lot more money than they were making to get to where they needed to be. To be where they were, you know, and the average person we talk to, it's like, you know, how much you care or love something, you know, and there's only so many slots and so many places to go, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, these are the sacrifices that we make, you know, and a normal person would look at you like, you know, that's into normal stuff, would look at you like, you're a nut job, man. If they knew, you know, you coming out, you're paying for your costumes to be made, you're, you know, going from point A to point B, you know, a hotel, all this stuff, you know, and they think one thing, but sometimes things aren't what they appear. You know what I'm saying? It's all for some.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And you got, you know, when life gives you lemons, sometimes you have to make lemonade.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly. So, well, do either of the other two of you guys want to get in here and jump in and ask Fred something? Or Fred and I just going to sit here and share road stories?
There you go, man.
You know what? I'll tell you what. I'll throw something out here again, and we'll just keep the conversation rolling here. You know, a lot of those things, because you know, like we talk about the fact that, you know, these are the people that we spend a large part of our lives and our daily existence with, and of course, a lot of the times, a lot of the things that we do, we'll play ribs on each other and that. So. What? Okay, all right. This is something I asked one of our other guests a couple weeks back. What was the best rib that you ever played, and what was the best rib that was ever played on you?
Oh, man, you know what? This is the thing with ribs. I myself, I was never much of a ribber. I have enjoyed many, many ribs, and some ribs you maybe go too far, you know? I mean, I've had the average, you know, stuff like your suit, your gear attached maybe 12 or 14 feet, padlocked to a hot water pipe in a building where, you know, it's extended way up in the air, you don't know where it's at. I've had, I've seen many ribs. I've been on an airplane where they met us with machine guns in Europe because maybe one of the other passengers wasn't such a nice guy, and wound up, when he woke up from his sleep to land, and he stuck his feet into two big piles of crap in his shoes. You know what I'm saying? Many eyebrows shaved off. I've seen guys wake up with half a beard and half a mustache. Oh, my God. A guy did the unforbidden, and I won't mention any names, but he was caught with another guy's girl in another town, and was involved in a car wreck, and was on a tour overseas afterwards, and his $500 Halliburton bag was crushed, opened, and was running in the shower while they were, what do you call it, singing Who's Making Love to Your Old Lady while you're on the road taking bumps. You know, across the loudspeaker in the auditorium in another foreign country. While all the guys
oh
are
my
dance. Yeah, and, I mean, I've seen some stuff that I can't mention out of protecting the not so innocent. But, I mean, it's like I said again, what we were talking about, when you're on the road with people for so long, it's a lot of tension. There's a lot of pent-up frustration and a lot of misery.
Mm-hmm.
Keeps you miserable. And you got to blow up that steam, man. You know?
Right.
I figure, you know, it's like the old-timers. I don't give any slams. I don't take no slams. I don't give any clotheslines. I don't take no clotheslines. I don't give no suplexes. I don't take no suplexes. You know, the old. So what are we supposed to do here?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know if you were there at this point, but I remember one that Chris Chavis Tatanka told me about, which was pulled off by none other than the King of Ribs, God rest his soul, Owen Hart, and it was over at the Vatican, and you know, everybody was in there on a tour of the Vatican, and Rene Goulet was the road agent working for this. So like I said, I don't know if you were there or not, or
yeah,
if you heard the story, but I guess Owen managed. Owen was pretty slick, and Owen actually picked Renee's pocket while they were there, and so they were, you know, posing, doing pictures and everything, and all of a sudden Renee reaches back into his back pocket, and his wallet's missing, and I guess, from what Chris told me, he was just absolutely freaking out, livid. He's going, somebody stole my bleeping wallet, right, you know, swearing right out there in the middle of the Vatican grounds and that.
I wasn't there for that one. I was there when they crapped in the king of crown as king of the ring in Baltimore. And he was perched on, they couldn't find it, and he was perched on the back of the toilet seat.
Oh, man. Gosh. So, all right. Well, all right, Sean, Bubba, either one of the two, you want to jump in on this? You know, I mean, you know, like I say, Fred and I, we're having a great time, but I'd love to have you guys throw some stuff in here.
They just don't love me, man. I can't say, you know, it's not my fault.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you just fine, Chuck. Yeah.
Okay. Fred, what was your favorite character out of all three that you portrayed to play?
All three? To be honest with you, even as retarded as the Shockmaster thing was, you know, it is the most viewed retarded thing in history, pardon my misuse of the proper etiquette, but... no matter what I was dealt and what I was given, I enjoyed all the characters. I loved being Typhoon for the fact, you know, we were heel faces, you know, because even though we were heels and we could do whatever we wanted to do, you know, it was, we were mean, nasty, and they even turned us kind of, you know, we could do and act the same way as we would as a normal heel and get away, and the people loved it, you know what I'm saying, because we kicked butt, you know, and tugboat, you know, here I was, when they came to me with that, they go, what did you think about that character, like, you know, me being, I tell everybody all the time, I'm still a big kid, you know, I read comic books, I read, you know, I watch cartoons, you know, I'm very shallow, but, you know, I enjoy stuff like that. I mean, I paint, I draw, and to be given, let me see, you're going to be the cross between the morph of Popeye and Brutus into one character. You know, the appearance of Brutus would be goofy Neanderthalness of Popeye the Sailor Man, you know, and have fun with it. And that's pretty, you know, here I was, a big 400-pound-plus kid, you know. And, thank you very much. Yeah. You know, I mean, it was one of those deals, you know. So, really and truthfully, all the characters were fun doing, even the Shockmaster. You know, was that you talking?
I don't know.
probably one of the most played YouTube bloopers in the entire, at least on the entire American continent, if not in the world. Of course, the famous Flare for the Gold entrance, where the piece of framing you were not warned was going to be there, suddenly showed up the day that you guys did the show.
Oh yeah, there you go, buddy. There was my. That's what I worked all those years. I took all those bumps for. Okay. Oh yeah. Oh baby. I made my mark. I have my own award in the WWF. You know, you're the recipient of the Shockmaster Award. You know what I'm saying? So there you go. You know, it was very well planned. It was very well executed. I did it. You know, I cannot tell a lie. You know, but it is what it is. You know, you get pissed off, you have a case of beer, and you're okay. Things will be better in the morning. Better than taking 2 hours for the morning. Become an alcoholic overnight and forget about it. You know, but you just roll the punches, man. You just got to deal with, you know, like I said, not a happy guy. You know what? You laugh, and people all have their opinions, and you get this, and you know what I'm saying? That's why now, when you watch movies, the best part when you buy a movie or rent a movie, and even at the movies themselves, are the outtakes. Because even the best of the best award-winning actors and actresses and entertainers, you know, and me, I'm never going to make an excuse for myself. It happened, it is, it was, and now it's infamous. It's not only famous, it's infamous.
The Shockmaster moment.
I remember just watching the YouTube video online with Triple H and Shawn Michaels where they were with Dusty backstage talking about the WCW DVD, and Triple H commented that it wasn't on there, and Arn Anderson was the voice, and they had somebody break through the wall again. Was that you?
Well, me? No, well, me. See, I told Dusty about that. I says, I'm really pissed off. I says, what was it? It had, God, what's the little Italian guy that does the sock puppets?
Santino Morales.
I heard Santino Morales was the guy that did it. You know, and I called him on the phone. Because my son had called me. He goes, Dad, you know, and I'm like, hey, Dusty, you know, you can't take your bow off? No, I can fall down as good as everybody else. I have experience. Check my resume. You know, you're afraid I might scoop it up and not fall down. But, oh, God. You know, but it's cool. It's just like my son now is learning television production, and he's working with the developmental down in Orlando. He does stuff, and he's learning the production. He's a hell of a referee, though. I want you to know my son is. You know, but he makes. I just didn't feed him enough. I said, you know, no, he's a good boy. But I went to one of their shows 2 weeks ago. They were over in Largo, Florida, and Brodus was there, and a couple of the other guys from up north, you know, because they send them in and out to work down here. And I enjoy. I still go. And now that I'm going to be settling here in Tennessee, me and my wife are opening a new business here in Tennessee, and I'm moving from Florida. We're going to take I've already had guys call me here because all the small promotions. But I liked going to the outlaw stuff and watching you guys, and you know, watching you guys work and stuff, and seeing things. You know, it's cool. You know, that's, you know, and hopefully guys get a shot. There needs to be more territory. You know, I wish it was like, even if it was single states, like places like that, where you had, you know, guys could learn, and it has such a larger range of places to bump. I mean, I think a TNA has OVW. They get a lot of their talent now from. And up in Ohio. And then they have the stuff down in Orlando, down there, that's WWE, they're developmental. You know, and there's as many as 80 guys in their training. You know, at different levels, new guys, you know, guys that have been there for a while, and then you got the guys that are under contract that are actually doing TV there, that's on Hulu, I think it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really kind of cool, at least that over here, outside, you know, you have somewhere to go. But there's a lot of guys that are training guys, you know, that really aren't good workers, you know what I'm saying? They're taking guys' money and stuff, you know, and I don't know. You know, and there's a lot of guys out there that are promoting shows that really don't know how to go about doing it, and where it's profitable and they can take care of their guys better.
Okay.
I don't know what you
guys
think. You know?
Yeah, that's actually a very good point, because, you know, I mean, I was fortunate because, of course, Sam DeCiro, who trained me, had a lot of experience because he'd worked with Bruiser and with Vern, and then over in Japan and that. And, you know, a lot of these guys now that set up shop, it's like, you know, they spent 6 months in somebody's school, and then they think that they're all of a sudden, you know, big shot enough that they can train somebody else in that. And they don't realize, you know, the amount of really years in that it takes to get the craft down. I mean, you know, I've been at this 25 years, and I still sit there and say, you know, I learn something new every time that, you know, that I step in the ring and referee matches and that. So.
Well, I tell guys all the time, if you don't, you know, if a guy promises you that he can get you to work after he trains you, you need to go somewhere. You know, as Randy Savage once told me, and I always use this, and I joke with his brother all the time. I was with Dusty and him one day, and we were driving somewhere in Arizona or something like that, going to, coming from a show, going to somewhere else, and the only guarantee for the moment is there no guarantee. You know? And that's the truth, man. There are no guarantees.
Yep.
Anybody tell you they can guarantee you something, that's pretty basic about everything. They can guarantee it, you know. You know, that's why they have those guarantees, because nothing is perfect. You know,
and
all they can do is give you the tools. It's up to you. If you don't have that natural, you know, ability, it's not, you know, I was a great amateur wrestler. A lot of those guys weren't the best workers in the business. There's a lot of good shooters that were in the business, but not, you know, some guys were just great amateur wrestlers, but it didn't transfer over. You know, I think Cody Runnels has done really good. He was a state champion in Georgia. You know, I mean, I'm prejudiced because he's my nephew, you know, but he's a heck of a little worker. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Dustin's a good worker. You know? Maybe it's the dad's gene. You know, he's a hell of a baseball player. That's right. Is that the role of the American Dream? My brother-in-law. So, that's it.
Yeah, let's check which... I'm sorry, go ahead.
All right, guys, we got about 5 minutes left.
Oh, my God, killing that time. They're watching that clock. Come on, baby, you can do it.
Brad, is there anything else you want to discuss?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Is there anything else I want to discuss? Oh, my gosh. No, I tell you what I want to discuss. I want to thank all the fans that are out there that were supportive for so many years, that put up with me falling down when I was the Shockmaster, that were there for me when I was cheering, when I was Tugboat and Typhoon. I appreciated them giving me the opportunity to be and perform in front of them and entertain them and try to do the best they could possibly do for them. Whether there was, because like my mentor told me and taught me, Great Malenko, who's one of the greatest guys I ever met in my life, other than my father, okay? You know, that no matter if there's 10 people or 10,000 or 100,000, always give them your best. You know, and if I could pass anything on, the guys that are coming up and the guys that are working in the business, you know, that's it. It doesn't matter if you're sick and you're puking outside in the back. You know, never show them, what do you call it, never show them the poker hand. Go out there and give them the best you can give them and give them the money, more than their money's worth, you know, and be appreciative. Don't be cocky, because without them, you would be nothing as a professional wrestler, you know, and that's all part of the business. And to have respect, everybody, whether it be a green guy or be a guy that's got 50 years in the business, you know, you should all be respected, because you all deserve the respect that you get.
And
you know, and I mean, my thoughts for today. You know, as my wife says, I'm not right.
All right,
thank you so much for. Yeah, because it's been really good. It's been great to share back some old times between the two of us. And that I'll message up with you on Facebook here sometime in the next couple of days, and you know, we'll have to chat some more. Just you and me.
I'm just let everybody. I'm going home. My dad, we got hospice coming in and checking, and my dad, he's fixing to go. He's been real sick, you know, I appreciate, you know, but, you know, that's another reason. I appreciate everybody. And my dad, even when I broke into business, came out and did a week's tour with the boys. He slept on the floor when I was in the beginning of my business. Slept with the boys, toured with the boys for a week in Texas. And he hung. And he's the greatest man ever in my life, you know, and I'm fixing to lose him, and it's sad, but, you know, he got to experience some of the same stuff that I've seen at the bottom rung of the business, which, to me, it's all great, man. And like I said, I appreciate you guys for calling me, showing an interest in me and having me, and share some of my ridiculousness with the fans.
Thank you, Fred. Can we get you to do one quick thing before you go?
What do you want me to do, man?
Can you say, this is Fred Ottman, and you've been listening to the Graveyard Radio Network?
Yes. This is Fred Ottman, and you've been listening to the Graveyard Radio Network. Didn't flub it up too bad. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Fred. You have a great evening.
Man, you too,
guys. Fred.
Yeah, God bless, man.
God bless.
You too. You too, brother.
All right, Steve, we've got about 40 seconds left. What a great show that was with Tracy Smothers and Fred Ottman. Man, memory lane it was. And it was like a reunion
yes,
for you tonight.
Yeah, it was. It was great to talk to both of them again. It's been years, and so it was fun to sit back, share old stories, and you know, just kind of give everybody a taste of what the business used to be like back in our early years and that.
All right. Well, next week, ladies and gentlemen, we have Crazy Mary Dobson, and rumor has it there'll be a special guest who's a madman. So
yeah.
Join us.
Yeah, get your speakers
out. We are off the air.